Something for All Dog Lovers and Lovers of London. Author Kate McDougall is my guest. Her new book, London's Number One Dog Walking Agency, is a memoir based on a 20-something's rite of passage from that ill-fitting first job to finding a true vocation. It's Kate's story of starting up in business as a dog walker for busy Londoners whose pets otherwise face long and boring days home alone. Along the way are many stories of canines whose eccentric behaviour is nothing compared to that of their owners. Kate joins me from her home in Oxfordshire. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
I'm well. I thought we'd start with your nearest and dearest, not just your partner, we'll come to him in a moment, but your own dogs, Mabel and Henry, and I thought I'd get you to describe them for us because they're quite characters. Yeah.
They are, yes, they are. They're actually asleep, hopefully, at the minute. Mabel is a Jack Russell. She features quite heavily in the book. She's 13 now, bless her. She's getting a bit deaf. And Henry is a sausage dog. He is 5. He's quite noisy. I think he's got a bit of small dog issues going on, but they're both adorable and, a key part of our family.
I was seeing a story the other day that dachshunds are on trend. They are the dog of the moment over there.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. When I was in London, I used to see a lot of them, but not so much up here. But maybe that we're going to catch up with London. But yeah, they are really popular. I think possibly over the last couple of years in lockdown as well, a lot more people have got them. I think people don't really realise they're quite a lot of dog to take on in a small package. They are quite feisty and boisterous. They actually, we take them for long walks in the woods around us, and if there's any deer to be sniffed, Henry is straight off after them. He's got no fear at all, despite being quite small. Bless him.
Well, if you both weren't able to take Mabel and Henry out for walks, what advice or demands would you have of a professional dog walker as a matter of interest, given what we're about to discuss?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have once or twice used a local dog walker when our children were much smaller and I was a bit more tied to the house. I think a lot, your dogs will give you a lot of that information. I think it's really important that they're there when you meet a potential dog walker to sort of gauge how the relationship might be between the two. You'll probably have someone who can give you some recommendations, but if not, your vet is a good place to start. They usually know who the best people around are. To sort of ask about what other dogs might be going out with your dogs, what kind of mix, how many, then that's quite key to sort of know who's going to be in the pack with your dogs, just to check that it's going to be the right combination.
What did the dog walkers you used report back on Mabel and Henry? Were they well behaved?
They are really well behaved. Mabel in her youth was quite prone to sort of running off and having selective hearing. She'd quite often pretend she couldn't hear us. She's only got half an ear on the right side. She actually lost half an ear to a badger. She used to go down badger holes quite a lot, but she stopped that in her old age, luckily. I think it's quite a brave dog walker to take on both our dogs, because sometimes they can sort of have a bit of pack mentality between the two of them and sort of run off together into the bushes. We're quite used to them now, so luckily they don't do that too much with us anymore.
It really tickled me to read that Mabel has contempt for swear words. She doesn't like Radio 4 or the sound of knives and forks clanking onto a plate. And I guess it just reminded me that every dog is an individual.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard to really work out where these little quirks come from. She's got quite sensitivity to noise, which is actually one of the things that going deaf has actually helped her with. She's not quite such a nervous wreck as she was. I think having 3 small children running around the house is probably enough for any dog, but she's quite a sensitive soul, I think. I think the swearing's probably come from the odd domestic between myself and my husband. If ever there was a bad word said, I think she sort of felt a bit scared by that. It's funny where these things come from. Mabel will object to the sound of a fork being put down on a plate, but if that plate's going in her direction, she'll make an exception.
Well, London's number one dog walking agency, Caters, is about the canines and their owners. But it's also your story, very much your story, and a coming-of-age story at that. So let's go back to when you came to London, came to the Big Smoke from this tiny little hamlet on the Welsh borders. You had your degree in art history and lots of ambition, I guess. But what was it like for you when you arrived in London?
It was difficult because I didn't have any family in London. A lot of my friends from university had family they could stay with. The minute you get into a big city, you realise that rent is going to be one of your big main challenges and how you're going to pay that rent. I quickly realised I was going to have to get a full-time job like everybody else, and I thought I would use my degree. So I ended up, after a series of temping jobs at Sotheby's, which was a fantastic place to work, and particularly for a young person, because most of the staff are in their 20s. So there's a lot of joking and gossiping and then going out for drinks afterwards. And for a number of years, it was a great place to work and to be in the centre of London as well, which is such a fabulous city. Pop out at lunch and have a look around galleries and shops, and all of that was absolutely brilliant. And most of my friends also moved to London. So for those sort of first few years of your 20s, going into your later 20s, it was wonderful. But I did get bored quite quickly, and I think office life wasn't really for me. I think that it took me about 4 years, 5 years to work out that I probably wasn't suited to an office, and not suited Sotheby's ultimately, although it was a fantastic experience to work there.
Your nickname, I see, was Clumsy Kate, and you had a few breakages, Kate, I think.
I did, yeah. I'm quite tall. I'm 6 foot, and I've always been a bit clumsy, a bit uncoordinated. So yeah, I did drop a few things here and there. Luckily, they've got pretty airtight insurance at Sotheby's, I've heard much worse stories of sort of very priceless works of art getting put in the bin, and I think someone put their foot through a Damien Hirst or something terrible like that. So it was never that bad. But yeah, I think the book details an incident where I knocked two pigeons off my desk in quick succession. And I think it was sort of the final straw for me working there. I realised that I needed to leave the office and go and do something completely different.
I think those pigeons were ugly, but thankfully not priceless, as how you describe them. Well, that's a big switcheroo from an auction house from Sotheby's to being a professional dog walker. I think a cute Cocker Spaniel had a role to play in this.
Yes, it was a spaniel owned by a well-known British actress, and she was on stage at the time on a Saturday afternoon, and I was at a picnic in Hyde Park with some friends and met this guy who was holding this dog. And I think I've always been someone who's ever seen a dog and just gone straight up to it and said, "Oh, can I say hi to your dog?" And he told me that he was walking it, and it's funny because dog walking just wasn't a thing back then. It was 2006, and no one really had a dog walker. So I was instantly intrigued. I did spend some time in my late teens in New York, and dog walking was a big, big thing there. You were constantly having to sort of stand back as sort of armies of chihuahuas walked past you down Fifth Avenue. So I knew of dog walking as a job, but just not in London, not in the UK. And I think that was the sort of the little seed of an idea planted in my mind about maybe I could do that. And that was what started it, really. But the jump from that little idea to actually setting up a business was there was no planning, really. I had a website, and I just sort of thought, well, how hard can this be? And just very much jumped in the deep end without really thinking it through.
When you talked it over, this concept, with your then boyfriend, now husband, Finlay, what did he say? Because he's not the biggest fan of dogs.
No, he's actually sat next to me now. He wasn't the biggest fan of dogs. I think first of all, he's 100% encouraging and supportive in whatever I do. So he immediately said, "That sounds great." I don't think he ever thought he would come across a dog himself. But that changed quite quickly. He came with me on one of the first walks I did, and we had the odd dog to stay with us in our little basement flat in London, in Vauxhall. So yeah, he quickly realized that actually he was going to have to get quite involved with some of the dogs. And then that obviously led into us getting our own dog. But he's an absolutely amazing husband. He used to walk the odd dog here and there for me on his lunch break as well, in his suit from his office job. So yeah, a total hero.
I think he and Henry will like this story. A listener, Claudia, has just got in touch to say, apropos Dachshunds and their feistiness, she says, my grandfather used to hunt wild boar in the Alsace and always had a rough-haired Dachshund to sniff out, run after and corner a boar. That's pretty impressive.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm not surprised in the slightest. They are such plucky little dogs. We're constantly amazed by Henry at how brave and courageous he is, even though he's literally about 4 inches high.
Well, you're brave too to think, as you say, about setting up a business. This was a big step for you. And you talk in the book about having experienced panic, anxiety, I guess we'd call it now. So what was that balance of fear and exhilaration walking into the unknown?
Yeah, I mean, I do talk in the book about, actually, I think one of the best things I had going for me was that I didn't know it very much at all about business. I think I would have moments like we all do where the reality of the situation you're in will suddenly sort of crash in on you and you start to get a bit panicky. Well, I used to have awful panic attacks and sort of just feeling slightly overwhelmed by the situation you've got yourself into. A lot of it was just sort of charging ahead and figuring out as I went along. You can't be prepared for the situations you're going to be in as a dog walker. Even if you know dogs and have grown up with them like I had, and even if you have sort of some professional experience with dogs, every day, every situation is so completely different. And then into the mix, you've got the owners and the general public. So it all makes for a sort of heady cocktail. And I think quite often not knowing what's around the corner is actually the best thing for you, because you go into it with a sort of open mind and open heart. And it's usually the best way to face situations like that.
Well, how does staying home alone all day affect most dogs? As I say, all dogs are different, but you know, dogs and the relationship with their owners. I mean, we've had lockdowns, of course, here and there, where dogs now that people have been going back to work are getting anxiety, you know, separation anxiety. It's a real thing.
Yeah, absolutely it is. I know from people even in my own village that's something that dogs are going through at the minute. I don't think it's ideal to leave dogs on their own for very long, but dogs are capable of spending periods of time alone. And if they've had good exercise and they are secure in their environment, they know their owners are going to come back, it's usually absolutely fine. I think the problems arise when they're left for too long, they haven't been exercised enough, and they're not really feeling secure in their environment. So those are the things that need to be addressed. I'm very lucky. I work from home. We live in a little village. My two youngest children go to the school over the road. So we're around all the time. But Henry particularly has a bit of a hissy fit if we're out for any stretch of time. And he does sort of can occasionally rip his inside of his bed out all over the floor. I think it's his way of saying not very happy about having been left today. But luckily they don't get left very often. I do feel dreadfully sorry for dogs that get left for hours and hours on their own, because apart from the fact that they love to be outside, I think they're probably desperately lonely as well. One of the reasons we got Henry was to keep Mabel company for the times when we weren't here, although luckily that is few and far between.
There are so many characterful dogs and characterful owners in your book, so I've just had to pluck a few out. I thought Winston is a good example of an interesting canine with interesting owners.
Yeah, absolutely. there are so many. Winston particularly, yeah, is one of my absolute favourites. He's one of the ones that we walked for a number of years, really, on and off. His owners were particularly protective, which a lot of them were, and he was a very boisterous Labrador. He wanted to roll in mud, he wanted to pick up sticks, he wanted to meet other dogs, and his owners had a very neat and tidy flat that they lived in, and they weren't particularly keen on him bringing the contents of the park back with him. So it made for a bit of a tricky situation. We managed to get around it by lots of wiping up the floor after we left. But he was just a dog full of exuberance and wanted to be as doggy a dog as he could be. And he wasn't always allowed to be, which was also quite sad at times.
Well, an extra dimension to this, though, is when his guardians split up and they embroiled you in what was clearly a very difficult shared custody schedule.
Yeah, it was. Well, one of them luckily moved to the area that we moved to, Wandsworth in southwest London. One of them stayed in Vauxhall, and there was a sort of very complicated arrangement back and forth between the two households initially, when I think they thought that they would easily be able to ferry this Labrador across South London back and forth in taxis and it would all be absolutely fine. But the dog just wasn't happy at all. Poor Winston, he got very unsettled. And then I got involved in spying for one of them via what was in their fridge. And that was probably one of those moments where I took a step back and thought, this is all a bit much. And how have I got myself in these crazy situations? But it all worked out fine in the end. And Winston was absolutely fine. But it sounds amusing now, but actually at the time was quite stressful.
Stressful too when you were looking after Fabio.
Fabio, yes, he's one of my favourite dogs, Fabio. He's a sort of very... he's a flamboyant dog, I'd like to say. He was a dog that seemed to be aware of his heritage and his upbringing. He was brought up in Rome. He came from a distinguished line of spaniels and always turned out immaculately. He came to stay with us in our little basement flat in Vauxhall, and I think he wasn't very impressed by our neighbourhood. he was the kind of dog who would sort of turn heads in the park, which was very amusing. But yes, he was also brought up to be a Hindu dog. And I didn't quite get the memo about his diet. And Finley and I accidentally fed him spaghetti bolognese, which didn't go down very well with his digestive system or his religious beliefs. But luckily the owners didn't find out about that part. So,
well, they know now.
Yeah, we were in- Luckily, the names are all changed. But yeah, another one of those situations where you can't quite believe you're in these scenarios and just try and work your way through it as best you can.
I mean, one of the tricks for you, I guess, as a dog walker is understanding your charge's behaviour. And you had a dog that would growl, say, at every single lamppost that you passed. And it was only later that you got the story behind that.
Yeah, I think this is it when I can't remember now. There's so many.
His owner had tied him to a lamppost once.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, of course. Yes, of course. Yeah, well, there were so many like that. And I think when you sort of spend time with the family and you sort of put these pieces together and you get little bits of information over the time that you're walking the dog and their behaviour makes complete sense, something that will start off just being... seemingly completely bonkers will the pieces will sort of fall into place as over time as you get to know them. It's a fascinating job, really. On the one hand, you think, oh, it's just walking dogs, but actually you're getting this little insight into people's lives and how these different families across London work. And I never sort of forgot what a privilege it was, really, to be such a trusted member of a household and to sort of pick up all these little bits of information about people's lives along the way.
You had some interesting requests from owners, bottled water for a pug, shiatsu massage for a poodle. I thought walking a Pomeranian while it was dressed in a fairy costume was one of the more unusual ones. I think dying inside was how you described that event.
Yeah, there were. I mean, I think the requests at the beginning were just so gobsmacking because it was just such a new and such a strange thing that I was doing. I sort of found them all just completely unbelievable. We had a dog quite early on that quite liked having a bedtime story at the end of a walk, and I think it was quite into sort of Harry Potter and Enid Blyton. I mean, it just sounds completely bonkers, but you know, if you break it down, it was probably just the sort of soothing voice that those books kind of instill in the reader. So it was probably just a nice way of calming the dog down after a walk. Well, yeah, we had dogs that would only speak certain languages. We had a Welsh collie that liked to sort of herd up commuters on their way to the tube because it was used to being up a mountain in Wales. Obviously, dogs with religious beliefs, as I just talked about with Fabio. Yes, the bottled Evian actually became quite a sort of pedestrian request after a while because there was just so many unusual ones. We had a dog that would only walk with security guards because the owner was so worried about its safety. And after a while, you know, you do become slightly unfazed and you just have to say yes with a big smile and absolutely no problem at all and just try and do the best you can.
What makes a good dog walker? What character traits do you need?
I think first and foremost you have to, I mean it sounds obvious, but it was not always the case with the dog walkers I hired. You absolutely have to love dogs, because I think whatever the weather, however you're feeling inside, whatever day you're having, you're always going to enjoy what you're doing and look forward to seeing that dog, and that dog is going to pick that up off you, and it's going to make for a good walk. I think if you really don't want to be there and you're not that fussed about the dog, then the dog will definitely pick up on that and it'll make the situation really difficult. I mean, the obvious sort of ones of being reliable and responsible, you only really get a short window to prove that you're a trustworthy person to the client. I think it's a big thing giving someone your dog and giving them your house keys and letting them into your lives in this way. I mean, dogs are such a key part of our families. And, you know, it takes such a lot to get that trust and so quickly to break it. If you cut a walk short or you're late or anything like that, it doesn't necessarily mean that the owner thinks that you're a bad person. It's just that their trust in you goes slightly. And I think you have to have a lot of trust in someone who's walking your dog. So those would be my key things, I think.
Fitness is useful. You describe yourself as being hideously, painfully, embarrassingly unfit when you started working on the agency.
I think I was. Yeah, I was. Sort of shamefully, I look back and think, oh my God, how did I even think that I was going to be able to manage it? I think when you think, oh, walking, I walk, that's fine. I'm not, you know, it's not jogging. And you sort of expect that you should be able to do long walks in your 20s and be absolutely fine. But I think if your body just isn't used to doing that, then it takes a bit of a toll and you have to sort of get your level of fitness up, which does happen naturally as you're sort of pounding the pavements. You do get fit quite quickly. I hope I'm a lot fitter now than I was then, because I do walk my dogs for a good long hour every day and do other sorts of exercise. But yeah, at the time I was living in a city and I suppose living a fairly sedentary lifestyle in an office, and I wasn't a gym bunny or anything like that. So, yeah, you do need a base level of fitness, I would say, definitely.
Did you have favourite walking routes around London?
Well, I walk dogs all over, really. So, I mean, I have my favourite parks, and you associate, it's funny, you associate a dog with a certain park. So Wandsworth Park is a big favourite of mine because I walk my own dogs there as well as many other, and I would walk down from there down to along the Thames down to Putney and Barnes. Wimbledon Common is a fantastic place to walk dogs, and then the parks in the centre of London, those routes are all absolutely fantastic. Walking around Battersea Park is just beautiful. Hyde Park, and then further up sort of Hampstead Heath is a bit more wild and woolly. There's some fantastic walks around there. I think London is really blessed with its parks. There are some fantastic open green spaces, and I think for dogs it's an absolute paradise. If you're going to live in a city as a dog, then you couldn't pick a better one than London.
Well, you are well qualified to answer this question. Do dogs look like their owners in your experience? I mean, you had a lovely description of a husky who you say looked uncannily like Rod Stewart from the mid-1980s, which I loved.
I think it's that sort of big hair that everyone used to have then, the sort of silver, big, poofy hair. It just, yeah, uncannily like Rod Stewart. It was quite extraordinary. I don't know. I mean, you can always sort of wangle it, can't you? You could say, I can see, you know, if you pull the same expression, the same hair, you can kind of see it. My husband thinks I look a bit like Henry. I'm not quite sure why. I think our dogs sort of do morph slightly into us. You know, they become such a key part of who we are that I can see in some people's eyes that we do sort of start to slightly resemble them, although I don't think it applies to everybody, which is probably a good thing.
Some of your clients were interesting people. They seem to be young professionals. They're trying to have it all. They're trying to have a career, but they also wanted to have dogs. Was that frustrating for you? Did you encounter people who perhaps had pets or their dogs for the wrong reason?
I think perhaps it wasn't always thought through. You could sense that the idea of having this dog and they were a very loved member of the household, but the lifestyle probably didn't really fit for the dog. We often saw dogs that were left for long, long hours on their own in not great spaces to live in. And I think it was very hard sometimes to, you know, disentangle yourself emotionally from those situations. We had a lovely dog that lived on Oxford Street above a shop, and it just wasn't the right environment for that dog. It was a Labrador and it didn't get enough exercise. And yeah, I think we want these beautiful, lovely companions in our lives, but I really think we have to think through that we have the best living environment and the best schedule to make sure that they're happy. It's just not ideal to leave them for long, long hours on their own. And I think in our minds we can do anything we want, but actually it's not always the best idea to have one if you're not able to look after it properly.
Thank you so much for your time, Kate. Kate McDougall, her memoir is called London's Number One Dog Walking Agency.